And welcome to the M2 Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Lenti. My co-host right here is Kyle Heath. This is the show where we cover this week's gaming industry-related news. We're talking new and upcoming games, technology innovation, general gaming industry-related news, and then we occasionally sprinkle in a little bit of esports and personalities. So without further ado, Kyle, what have you been up to, man? How you been? How's it going?
I'm good, dude. I've been chilling, you know, this past week. I feel like the only game I played was that Lightyear Frontier. Played some more of that.
Very nice.
Kind of grinding through that a little bit. But I don't know. Outside of that, there wasn't really too much else. I don't know. I've been back on like the finance kind of style content again. Like just
very
like
nice.
Consuming some like, you know, some of the Caleb Hammers and all that. So kind of just trying to get my mind set back to like, you know, focusing on my finances kind of thing. So
dude, I feel that.
So yeah, a lot of that this week. Just kind of getting back on track there. But really it was just Lightyear Frontier, which I'd been enjoying. We played at least a few more hours over the weekend. So it wasn't a whole lot, but we still made some good progress. So that game's been a lot of fun. So hoping to get back on that maybe a little bit more this week. But I don't know. Outside of that, it's really just like between that and then just like kind of, you know, grinding content for this for the podcast. So it's kind of getting stuff
very
out.
Nice.
I think we have some good traction, so kind of just riding that wave.
Yeah. Yeah, you're doing a good job with the edits. Every time you send one, I'm just like, dude, this guy's crushing it.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen a little consistency too in like numbers and stuff like that, which is encouraging. Be like, I feel like I'm doing something right kind of thing. So it's always nice to see.
Yeah. I really like how you basically add the text and everything of what we're saying, because sometimes people, like, you never know, they might not have the volume all the way turned up and they're just trying to see some video. And then if you have the text, they can just read it. You know, it's a good idea.
Yeah, I think it's helpful to have. And like every time I see podcast related shorts, there's always like some subtitles or something. So I feel like, you know,
for sure,
I feel like it's like cleaner if you just add it yourself kind of thing. So I did. But yeah, dude.
Nice, dude.
What about you, Mike? You've been grinding games, dude?
Not really, to be honest. I tried to play a little bit more Halo and then I just got like, got kind of sick of it. We had somebody in town this last weekend. So I usually game more on the weekends than I do on the weekdays. But with somebody here visiting, I was like, I'm not going to be on the computer the whole time, you know, kind of rude. I did get a chance to watch Roadhouse with Jake Gyllenhaal,
I saw the trailer for that, I think.
Yeah. Everybody was like talking trash about it, but I mean, I like bad movies, so I enjoyed it. And I thought it was entertaining. I've also been watching a lot of Tokyo Vice on HBO. My coworker said it, I had to watch it, and he was right that good show. But like in terms of actual gaming content, or like, dude, I've just been chilling watching YouTube. Really, I'm doing the same thing that you're doing, like not in terms of finance, but just trying to get disciplined again like I used to be. I think when everything went into lockdown, I got kind of lazy and I've noticed that, so I was like, you know what, let me step it back up. So trying to get back into, like, the weather's getting nicer. I fixed up the bike a little bit, my bicycle, to ride in to and from work. Get that outdoor air, always good. Trying to go to the gym a little bit more consistently, a little bit more intentional. Because sometimes I'll just go in there and just BS around. And I'll do my whole workout, but it's like I'm kind of taking my time, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, let's speed up the pace. Let's, like, actually, like, maximize our efforts here.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'm trying to do is just keep the house in order, you know? So, like, I told you earlier today, this morning, about house is just a wreck, and I got home from work yesterday. I'm like, nah, we're taking care of all this. So I literally got home at, like, 4:30 and just did cleaning for, like, 5 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
I went hard.
Jeez, dude.
Like, everything's – oh, yeah, dude. I there's, like, more stuff I got to do. There's, like, little things that always stack up that you can never really get done, if you know what I mean. Like, there's always going to be dust everywhere. But it's like, I need to dust this area in particular because I have all my electronics in here. It's a little bit concerning. And I feel like the static electricity really builds up around the PCs, you know?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I feel like my mindset's changed a lot like over the past couple of years when it comes to like cleanliness and stuff like that, especially around like the house. I feel like, because like, I don't know, there's something about like, because and then like I heard it somewhere, but it's like some, like, there's always going to be dishes, like there's always going to be dust, like there's just things that are be content, there's things that are always going to be, so it's like it's almost like worthless. It's not really worth the time to get like upset or like ornate over it. I'm just like, well, it's always going to be there. So I think True. I think it gets to a certain extent too. Like, you know, if it's all like not your dishes or anything like that, that's one thing. You could probably get on someone about it. But like at the same time too, it's just kind of like, yeah, it's always going to be there. So it's one of those things that I guess I'm conditioned to a certain extent to just be like, let's just get it done kind of thing.
Yeah. I think I had the same exact mindset as you for the last like couple of years, where I was just a little bit more laid back. But what I used to do, and I think what I'm going to start doing again, is this idea of like, if there's a problem that you have right now, then you should take care of it right now, no matter how small it is or how big it is. Just take care of it as quickly as possible, because if you don't, then it becomes a bigger issue later on.
Yeah.
Like usually with procrastination, it's like, I'm not saying be like crazy about it. It's like some nights, yeah, you just ate, it's been a long day, you don't have to clean up the dishes right away. Don't let it sit for a week, you know? It's like maybe the next time you're in the kitchen, you got time and you're just like, you know what, it's easier if I do it now than I do it later.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah,
that's been something that I've kind of, like I said, discipline I haven't really had. I haven't really been doing as much as I used to. So I'm just going to prioritize a little bit more of that, and it's going to put me in a better mood overall, just to be fully organized, fully cleaned out, and like concentrating on whatever gets in the way I can get done. And that should transfer over to the podcast more often, I think.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, probably one last little thing before we hop off of this stuff, but it's like, I think too with me, like, just like ever since it's been a month now of like me like taking cardio workout more seriously. Cause like I used to like always, like I would always lift and stuff, like just kind of maintain health, but I never did like any high intensity training kind of thing. And I don't know, ever since incorporating that, like I feel a lot better than like I feel like I ever have. And it's like, I feel like that's kind of spilling into other areas of my life. And I don't know, like, and like with the podcast stuff, it's like, I like doing like the shorts and stuff like that. Like I always enjoy doing them, but like, I feel like for the longest time I was just like, I would always be like, oh, I should probably like make some content or here, like just take an hour and do this and that. And I just never did. And I was just getting like too, you know, into my head or something like that, I guess.
Oh yeah.
And so like, for me, it was like, I feel like just kind of having a little more discipline, like you're saying, towards this stuff about like maintaining that exercise and like, you know, actually trying to like, you know, make some like steady or like, you know, I guess like the 1% progress every day towards something, it like compounds into something greater. So I don't know, that's kind of the mindset I think I've been taking more recently, and it's made me just enjoy things more, I guess. And I'm just more like, I feel like I'm kind of more productive than I ever have been. So I don't know, I'm hoping it kind of continues, but it's like I'm trying to discipline myself to, you know, stay on track. And I don't know, it's so weird. I feel like the running was what, like, it just feels good. Like, I don't know, it feels good to just be active, and I think it's spilling over into other aspects.
You know, it's one of the things that I actually did when I was at like my lowest low that I've told you about. One of the things I never stopped doing was running. And the reason why, it's like, I remember I was like, when I was training and I was on a soccer team, the man, like the coach was saying, he was like, if you ever feel bad, just go for a run. And if you can't run, then go for like a hike or a long distance walk, like do something where you're moving your entire body, like running does, and do it until you are basically tired and you don't want to do it anymore. And the reason why is like, your body automatically gives you endorphins. It's like the cheapest bit of endorphins that you can possibly get. That's why you get people that are just obsessed with the gym, right?
Yeah.
And then like people literally like workaholics, like workoutaholics, like total, like what do they call them? Gym rats. Like those guys literally become depressed after like a week of not working out because they don't have those like cheap endorphins. And they like, you got to have something that builds you up regardless of what it is. Just, I think by cheap, it's like everybody can walk. Well, not everybody, but you know what I mean? Like there are little things you can do to move the body.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. It comes back to, you know, it may sound kind of woo-woo, but like you are like kind of more connected with yourself, I feel like, when you exercise and stuff like that. So that's been my experience. And I think running is really like exaggerated part of like of that journey for me, I think.
Oh, for sure. Dude, the article that we're talking about actually kind of goes into a little bit of health stuff. So this is actually on topic, but I do have a friend that is trying to like concentrate on his health by cutting out alcohol, like caffeine, tobacco, and nicotine, all these other things. Mm-hmm. And he didn't really have that mindset of like, I should do it. I'm just like, well, you have a kid. And he's just like, yeah, but I mean, like, I don't really, I was like, dude, go run a mile and try to get it under 8 minutes and tell me how you feel. Because he's not going to make 8 minutes. He hasn't run in years. He's overweight. Yeah. He's like all this stuff. But if like if you challenge yourself to that level where you feel like in agony, you're going to be like, okay, my body isn't where I thought it was. Like it's a very serious gut check that some people need to like help yourself, you know, try to get better, try to get healthier and get rid of the bad stuff.
Yeah. No. That's where I'm trying to get to is like sub 8 minute miles. So you know, it's a goal and it's taken a lot longer than I thought it was going to. But
oh, dude, it's no joke.
But I've been enjoying the progress I've made already just in months. So it's I'm going to keep doing it, I think. So,
well, I know you can do a 5K. So if you just keep doing your 5Ks, don't stop. Then like every week to 2 weeks, do the mile where you're trying to do an 8 minute mile.
Yeah.
And you probably will get it. Yeah. Like eventually you'll get it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's all about pushing yourself and pushing your body. And you know what, Mike?
Pushing your mind.
That's a good segment you got there. Because that's our first article. This article is about Neuralink. And it's one of those things like I kind of just I haven't heard too much about it. Like but I just heard that there was like a first human patient recently, and so I really wasn't like too concerned or like, you know, I wasn't looking into it too much until this article came out. This is from IGN. This is particularly Anthony Wood over at IGN. So the first human patient to receive a Neuralink brain implant used it to stay up all night playing Civilization 6. I feel like such a sick use for Neuralink. He said, quote, "It was worth it. I think is the best way to put it. It was awesome." So
that's awesome. I'm excited to hear like the feedback. It's so interesting.
So like I read the article a little bit beforehand. The first sort of few paragraphs is really just set up, and so I think it's worth mentioning. So the first super recipient of the Neuralink brain implant has shared new details about his recovery and experience of living with an experimental assistive tech, which has allowed him a greater level of freedom and autonomy, including the ability to pull an all-nighter playing Civ 6. Sid Meier's, baby.
Is.
Neuralink
sick.
Neuralink co-founder Elon Musk took to X Twitter in January to reveal that the company had implanted its first brain-computer interface in the head of a human patient who was recovering well following the surgery. Billionaire also hinted at the time that the implant was functioning well and had detected a promising neuron spike in a subsequent February update. Musk commented that the unnamed patient had seemingly made a full recovery and was even able to use the implant to manipulate a computer cursor with thought alone. Finally, on March 20th, Neuralink posted its own update on X in the form of a 9-minute live stream in which the 29-year-old implant recipient Nolan Arbog used the technology to play digital version of chess while discussing how living with the experimental aid has changed his life. So this is pretty crazy, Mike. He's playing chess with his brain, wild. Dude.
Does he count as a cyborg?
At this rate, I would think so, right?
Chess. I would definitely call myself a cyborg if I did this.
Quote, "It was like using the force on the cursor and I could get it to move wherever I wanted, just stare somewhere on the screen and it would move where I wanted it to, which was such a wild experience," explained Arbog. The 29-year-old complete quadriplegic shared that he had lost sensation and suffered paralysis from below the shoulders after sustaining a spinal injury during a diving accident 8 years ago, and had felt compelled to volunteer for the trial out of an urge to be a part of something that he felt could change the world. Throughout the live stream, Arbog could be seen using the Neuralink brain-computer interface, BCI, to control an on-screen cursor to play the game of digital chess and pause music that had been playing in the background. Arbog also revealed that the implant had given him the freedom to pull an all-nighter playing the strategy game Sid Meier's Civilization VI, something that he could not have done on his own before the surgery. It's like, I wonder like how long after the surgery he was like, "You know what, dude? I want to play some Civ 6. Like, because I played in a minute. So, like, I just wonder when that hit. So anyway, he said, quote, "One of the first times you all gave me complete control over the Neuralink tech, I actually stayed up until like 6 a.m. playing Civilization 6. He said, in a Neuralink scientist, Bliss Chapman. "It was worth it. I think is the best way to put it. It was awesome." Arbog explained that he had largely given up on playing Civ 6 prior to having surgery, and he needed, quote, "complete help from a friend in order to play, and the time-intensive nature of the game had made prolonged play sessions untenable." He said, quote, "So it wasn't feasible for me to play for a full game or anything. Now I can literally lie in bed and play to my heart's content. Honestly, the biggest restriction at this point was having to wait for the implant to charge once I had used all of it. That's interesting.
Dang.
So he has just like charge it. That's crazy. I just like, I don't know why my brain was just like, oh yeah, like that's just on all the time, right? Like,
yeah, that's what I thought too. I was just like cyborg stuff. Like it just runs off of your natural body energy.
Is he just taking like a USB-C and just like, how, what is he doing here?
Oh my gosh, dude. Like Neo in the Matrix.
just click it in the back. Yeah, like the back said. The 29-year-old also revealed in a subsequent Neuralink presentation posted on X that the implant had allowed him to play Mario Kart 8 Deluxe using the neural signals decoded by the BCI tech. Playing Mario Kart and coming in second repeatedly blew my mind. I didn't think that would be possible like a week ago to using it. That was freaking wild. Even though my dad and my buddy wouldn't let me win, said Harpong. Oh, man. So he's like playing Civ. Man's on Mario Kart. He's living his best life now, dude, on these games.
That is so awesome. I'm happy for him. This is really cool.
Yeah, this is actually pretty cool. So article continues, the implant had also helped Nolan to begin learning French and Japanese and has generally removed barriers when it comes to reading. He has also emphasized that he had suffered no cognitive impairments as a result of the procedure and that he was able to leave the hospital a day after undergoing the 2-hour surgical procedure. In a quote on March 21st by Elon Musk at 1:42 a.m., he said, "Long term, it is possible to shunt the signals from the brain motor cortex past the damaged part of the spine to enable people to walk again and use their arms normally." So that's the long term. What they're going for is the like literally just like, yo, you're paralyzed.
Yeah, they're,
let's go, baby.
They're literally trying to rebuild the spine.
Yeah, that's, so they're essentially
not the,
yeah,
the spinal, I mean, cord. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're trying to like just essentially bypass those signals and be like, here, let's use our limbs again. Pretty sick. Quote, "It's not perfect. And I would say that we have run into some issues," commented the 29-year-old. "I don't want people to think that this is the end of the journey. There is still a lot of work to be done, but it has already changed my life," he said. Soon after Neuralink posted a video, Musk took the X to reemphasize his ambitious long-term goal, which we just read. Neuralink has also discussed the possibility of using implants to stimulate regions of the brain in order to help blind patients to see with the aid of cameras. Neuralink,
so
dude, that'd be kind of nuts. Blind people with cameras, like, what? Anyway. Neuralink was founded by Elon Musk and a handful of scientists and engineers in 2016 with the goal to create a brain-computer interface, BCI, that could one day be used to restore autonomy to those with unmet medical needs. In order to use the interface, a patient would have to undergo an invasive procedure performed by a surgical robot, in which a circular section of the skull is cut away to make room for the implant. During the operation, a collection of ultra-thin electrode-carrying threads are inserted into key areas of the brain, where they record neural activity, then transmit via the implant to the Neuralink application, which decodes the data into executable actions such as an order to move a computer cursor to a designated point. The company has attracted significant controversy in recent years, owing the concerns surrounding the treatment of animals used in the pre-human trials. In December 2022, Reuters reported, citing official documents and interviews with over 20 past and present Neuralink employees, stated that the company's experiments had led to the deaths of over 1,500 animals, including monkeys, pigs, and sheep, since 2018. Oh my gosh. that's some crazy trials.
Yeah, that's a lot of animals. PETA was probably very upset.
Yeah,
for sure.
To say the least. It is not uncommon for animals used in healthcare trials to be euthanized at the end of the study. However, according to Reuters sources, pressure from Musk, who was allegedly frustrated by the company's apparent lack of progress, had reportedly caused Neuralink scientists to adopt a rushed approach to some surgeries, which in turn allegedly led to avoidable mistakes being made that caused needless death and suffering for animals involved. Boo! That's rough.
I mean, is that shocking that Musk is over here putting pressure on people to finish the job?
Yeah.
He's notorious for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it seems like, so I mean, most, feels like the rest of this article is kind of, you know, talking about those, this kind of, this bad trials and kind of what went on leading up to this point. But yeah, I think overall it's kind of crazy that, you know, that the Neuralink is working in a human and he's able to like play games that he wasn't able to play before. And it seems like it's it seems like there's an upward trend and it being a positive enhancement, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it definitely comes at the cost of animals for sure.
Yeah.
And it's really unfortunate. But the other thing is like for people to be allowed to see again or to walk again, to get full mobility in their body again would be like that's groundbreaking. We're really getting into the point where we can rebuild our bodies like cyberpunk and do upgrades. I could see this being an upgrade for people. Yeah. You know, it's just like if you're a normal healthy person, you're like, oh, just go get Neuralink implanted and now you no longer need to use your hands and arms or anything.
Yeah, now you know you can like learn any language instantly and just be fluent. That'd be yeah. Crazy.
It really is getting to that Matrix level stuff. Imagine tapping into a chip that's sticking out of your head and you know every language ever and you do upgrades.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like it's so weird, like it's cool. And there's also a level of like scariness to it at the same time.
Oh, it's terrifying.
It's like, dude, it's like it's
terrifying.
Like, it's just like, I don't know, what are we doing? Like, it's cool. Like, I'd be interested to see kind of the good it can do, but also it's just like, can't help but just be terrified by it. At least I can. So.
Yeah, I could definitely see this getting regulated. For yeah, sure.
For sure, yeah.
But for right now, just helping out people that couldn't otherwise entertain themselves. Like, for this guy to go out and play probably one of his favorite games. I mean, it's got to be a good game that he appreciates to be playing until 6 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, all night. Like, this is really cool. That's probably, like, when you're paralyzed like that, I'm sure you got to feel like nothing else is ever going to, you're never going to be able to do things again.
Yeah.
So to go out and play your game and not need the help of somebody else, that's got to feel, like, amazing. That's got to be a magical moment for you.
Yeah. For sure. Dude, I can only imagine the amount of like dopamine going through his head, like when he was just playing Civ all night. He's just like, dude, I get to do this on my own. But yeah, it's gotta be an awesome feeling. So big ups to my man.
He looks so happy too in the video for yeah. Neuralink. Yeah. Dude is just grinning. And he's cooking yeah. his friend.
Oh, good stuff. That's cool. Dude. Nice little kind of feel good article, I guess. But we move on.
Finally.
Move on to... Honestly, it's not really like a crazy article, but the news behind it I thought was interesting, so...
Yeah, this next one's pretty interesting. So it comes from... Let's see. Well, it comes from Game Industry Biz and is Jeffrey Rousseau? Rousseau or something?
Yeah, Rousseau. Jeffrey? That's what I say. I don't know if
Rousseau? Right. I think your Rousseau seems way better. Yeah, Game Industry Biz came out with this article and it's titled Kotaku Editor-in-Chief Exits Due to Parent Company's New Guidance Directive. So Jin Glannon is the editor-in-chief. He resigns after 5 months into... I said Jin, didn't I?
He misgendered. Yo, this is crazy.
My bad. Jin Glannon resigns after 5 months into her role while the publication... deprioritizes news. What does that even mean? Okay, so Kotaku, yeah, this is like I saw YouTube videos of this and I saw people reacting to it and I was like, dude, I want to read it myself and then get my own opinion, but let's go. Kotaku editor-in-chief Jin Glannon has exited a role after reportedly due to a new editorial direction from the from GO Media, according to Aftermath. Interesting how Aftermath is now calling out this article, because didn't Kotaku lose a couple of writers to Aftermath?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah, so this is pretty interesting. So, per Glennon's letter of resignation, the parent company, GO Media, mandated that the game's publication focus on game guides and deprioritize news. It's going to shift? Mandated that the game's publication focus? Okay. So, this is the letter of resignation. I firmly believe that the decision to invert Kotaku's editorial strategy to deprioritize news in favor of guides is fundamentally misguided given the current infrastructure of the site. This decision is directly contradicted by months of traffic data and shows an astonishing disregard for the livelihoods of the remaining writers and editors who work here. According to a source familiar with the matter, Kotaku staffers are expected to create 50 guides in a total a week, Aftermath notes that the site's landing page area, a space typically home for major stories and breaking news, has been replaced by tips and guides. Glennon was hired back in October 2023, and with their exit, Kotaku lost another editor-in-chief in under a year. Back in August 2023, Patricia Hernandez was reportedly fired following a personnel disagreement.
Oh,
let me ask you something. Let me just ask you an open-ended question, dude.
Okay.
Where do you get your tips and guides for video games?
I don't know, Walmart, maybe. Drive down to local Walmart, you're just like, hey, where's my gaming guides?
You actually get those?
No, like still? No, not still. Back in the day, yeah. But no, not still.
Yeah, but near 2024, if you're struggling right now to get the answers to, like, let's say, an open world game like Breath of the Wild, and you're trying to figure out where the time sword is, like, what do you have to do to get it? What do you do? What's your go-to thing?
I don't know. What time period is this? Is this current day?
This is current day.
You know, Mike, there's a 101 website that we post podcasts to on a weekly basis, in video format called YouTube.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I'm pretty sure that's where everybody gets their stuff. Like Call of Duty, what's the best... what's the best like loadout or whatever, and everything that they have. Like, I see so many YouTube shorts of that crap. Like, oh, put on this, put on that, put on that, put on that. Oh, by the way, there's going to be an update in 2 weeks that nerfs everything, and you got to get another video. It's like a never ending tips and guides YouTube channel. And I don't know what Kotaku is doing. And I agree with the editor in chief that left. It just doesn't make sense. Why would you try to make news articles for tips and tricks and gaming guides? You know?
You know, that's a really interesting take that, yeah, that, like, after you said that, yeah, that, like, why would you do that? You're just gonna go to YouTube. Like, I would rather see a video than, like, read an article, especially in 2024, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the smart thing to do, like, so where is this? According to a source familiar with the matter, Kotaku staffers are expected to create 50 guides in total a week. Let's assume each staffer has one guide that they have to do.
Yeah.
Why would they not just spend a week at home making a YouTube video on it?
And
why would you write about it and put it on Kotaku?
Drive the traffic back to Kotaku. I mean, come on. You can, like, if you want to script something up, like, yeah, sure, you could post it to the site, but, like, just make a video at that point. I get it, right? They're journalists, right? They're not video editors. Yeah. They don't want to sit there and make videos. I understand that. But, I mean, yeah. I mean, I think in today's, like, current climate, like I said, for guides and stuff like that and tutorials, it would make more sense, like you say, to do it on YouTube. I just think it's crazy that we're talking about 50 guides a week. That just seems like a lot. Like, how big do they have to be, I guess? It comes into, like, a thing. Is it, like, you know, is it a guide for something that's, like, you know, only, like, 10 steps? Or is it, like, guides for, like, you know, whole levels in a game? Like, what are we talking about here?
IGN has, like, really, really good guides that I think... IGN doesn't prioritize guides. They used to initially, like, tips and tricks in their magazines. Mm-hmm. They'd have that section all the time, if you remember that back in the day. But yeah. IGN in particular, they got it right where each individual, like, they'll have a guide that has a bunch of steps. Then each step has its own page. That it's kind of like a wiki. You know how, like, some video games have their own wikis and they give you step-by-step guides on, like, how to beat a mission or whatever for the campaign level? That's a good idea. I get that. I understand that. But this doesn't, like, why are you trying to compete with somebody like IGN? Why are you trying to compete with YouTubers that have unlimited time? You know?
Dude, also, like, I just love when they were talking about, like, because she was saying, like, it directly contradicts, by months of traffic data that shows the disregard. It's just like, they're going against, like, the data too, which is just like, are we trying to just undermine this company? Is that the end goal? Is this just the doomsday plan? What's going on here? It just doesn't make sense.
It's going to be sad to say, but it's like when you're in a company that's so big, because they have a parent company here, the parent company just basically tells you whatever you have to do, regardless of fundamental data or information. Now, I've been in big companies where the people at the top level are making decisions and they don't understand the product that their employees are producing. It's like, you don't understand the product that's being made. Why are you trying to advertise it? You know, it just, it makes no sense of how it's supposed to work. And it's unfortunate because I'm sure the staffers at Kotaku are upset. It's just like, I didn't come here to do tips and guides. I came here to like interview developers and learn about the gaming industry.
Do some actual journalism.
Try to help the scene. Yeah, like actual journalism. Yeah. Like, what?
I mean,
I would be, I would quit immediately, like probably straight on the dot.
Listen, all I gotta say is Jason Schreier was like one of the best journalists in the industry.
Dude,
like,
he crushes.
I mean, very polarizing individual, but I really love the work he puts out. But like, he left Kotaku. I think this is probably part of the reason, was because maybe there was a shift towards stuff like this. And so he was just like, oh, there's a better gig at Bloomberg where I have more control. I'm taking it.
Easily. So, easily.
I don't know. Kotaku has never been the same without Jason Schreier, just put it that way. At least in my opinion.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, Kotaku has been on the downhill path for a while, and I know a lot of people that really don't like them, and they're very excited that it's just going to cease to exist probably soon, because it's like, actual data and information that this ain't going to work and you're still going to go through with it, it's like, okay, so we're just self-sabotaging now.
I mean, yeah, literally.
Yeah.
That's all it is, that's right.
That's like going to the gym and then getting home and having a chocolate cake for dinner. What are you doing? Yeah, what are you doing?
Oh, it's crazy stuff. Oh, man. I will say, like, a lot of Kotaku's, like, article titles, they, like, always would get me. I think there's some of them that are funny, and there's some that just, like, I'm just like, well, I wouldn't read that, like, just for the way they word it kind of thing. So, it's interesting. I mean, Kotaku's always been an interesting publication, so I think the fact that they're doing something that, like, statistically is going to be harmful is just, it kind of makes sense to a certain extent.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how this all plays out, because so many publications have basically started to close down, because you and I see it more than I think most people, because we're looking at the articles all the time. And I think it's going to be an interesting shakeup this year of what's going to happen. Like, what's going to happen to Kotaku? How's the aftermath going to actually pan out? Is the rise or fall of Twitter going to influence things? And YouTube is king, so what's the plan here? Like, how's this going to play out? It's going to be very, very interesting going forward.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. I don't understand it, Mike.
I barely understand it, bro. But I think what you might understand is World of Warcraft subscription numbers.
That's a good segue. Yeah, dude, this is an interesting article, because, like, when I was looking through, like, the RSS feeds and whatnot, I, like, saw this and I was like, yeah, I don't know if I've ever really, like, I guess, like, Blizzard, I don't think, has ever really published those numbers, right? So anyway, so this is coming from Cameron Koch over at GameSpot. He said, "We finally know WoW subscription numbers thanks to a Blizzard GDC talk. Blizzard said Shadowlands saw historical high numbers of players leaving the game, but subscriptions are now trending upwards. World of Warcraft subscription numbers have long been shrouded in mystery, but thanks to a recent Blizzard GDC talk and some clever number crunching by a WoW content creator, fans of Blizzard MMO now have some hard data on exactly how many players are paying a monthly subscription fee for the privilege of exploring Azeroth. Blizzard stopped giving out exact subscription numbers prior to the release of the game's 2016 Legion expansion. Since then, fans have been wondering how well or poorly the game has been doing from a player numbers perspective, especially following the release of 2020 Shadowlands, which is considered a low point in the game's history. The good news is there are now some actual numbers to mull over, even if they are rough estimates. According to an estimate by Bellular Gaming, based on a chart shown by Warcraft General Manager John Haidt as part of the recent GDC talk, as well as previous Activision Blizzard earnings statements, WoW currently has an estimated 7.25 million subscribers. That number is significantly up since the launch of 2022's Dragonflight. It is a major course correction following the game's polarizing Shadowlands expansion. Haidt, as part of this talk, discussed what went wrong with Shadowlands and how Blizzard worked to get players back. This is kind of an interesting insight, I think. So according to Haidt, the Shadowlands setting, its treatment of fan favorite characters and its new villain all missed the mark. It also disappointed from a gameplay perspective, with too much focus on borrowed power systems and a lack of variety. Community additionally didn't feel heard during Shadowlands, and Blizzard on its own admission lacked transparency with the player base. It's no surprise then that during Shadowlands' height said the game experienced historical high churn when it came to players canceling their subscription. From the launch of Shadowlands to its lowest point ahead of the release of Dragonflight, it's estimated WoW lost over 3 million subscribers. Even the re-release of the Burning Crusade Classic and Wrath of the Lich King Classic, two popular old-school expansions that were both included as part of the base WoW subscription during this period, did nothing to bump plummeting player numbers. And they showed a little chart here on the article for those watching the video. You see World of Warcraft Legion 2016, and then WoW Classic kind of brought some people back, you know, kind of had a nice little spike. Shadowlands dropped, and then it just, like, plummeted, and then it was down for, like, you know, a year or two. It's, like, really low, and then now, you know, with new expansions coming out, and kind of the War Within is supposed to be the expansion coming out this year, it seems like numbers are back up. And then there's a nice little kind of number chart someone drew up of just kind of where numbers were throughout the process. Yeah, WoW Classic, dude. Brought people back for sure. And he had a nice little, it says he estimated 8.27 million players or subs. And I forget how much WoW is, but isn't WoW like 15, 20 a month or something like that? Subscription fee, it's around there, I'm pretty sure.
I've actually never played World of Warcraft ever.
Yeah.
All my friends did at one point, but I'll look it up while you keep going.
Yeah. So it continues. Dragonflight's launch saw a spike in subscription numbers, as is usual for an expansion launch. The numbers then began to dip once more before steadily rising over the course of the expansion, an upward trend unseen in recent WoW history. In earnings statements, Activision Blizzard stated that subscriber retention numbers of Dragonflight were stronger than other more recent expansions, and Blizzard continued to build on the momentum with frequent content updates and more communication from the development team via a year-long content roadmap. Late last year, additionally, saw the release of WoW Classic Season of Discovery, which looks like it provided another strong uptick in subscription numbers. All of the numbers discussed above are estimates, but according to Windows Central, are fairly accurate according to its own sources. WoW subscription numbers are trending upwards ahead of the game's 2024 expansion, or within, and seems to indicate that Blizzard's course-correcting actions post-Shadowlands are working. The War Within will kick off a 3-expansion storyline Blizzard is calling it the World Soul Saga. As with any new expansion, the War Within will add new zones to explore and dungeons to complete. It will also introduce a new in-game activity that can be completed solo or with small groups, as well as a long-awaited account-wide progression system called Warbands. Blizzard recently unveiled a surprise limited-time battle royale playable in WoW called Plunderstorm, one that can be played by anyone with a WoW subscription.
Oh, shit.
We got us a little BR mic in WoW. Let's go.
Yeah, for context here, I did send you the screenshot of the cost.
Okay.
So for a full year, if you buy in bulk, it's $155 to play World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
If you do it per month, it's $15. So it's anywhere from $15 to $12.99. It's just that kind of range based on, what do you call it? Bulk pays and stuff.
Okay. Not too bad.
So what do you think? Do you think these numbers are accurate?
Yeah, I mean I think the numbers are probably accurate. I was almost gonna say it was like kind of surprising, but I don't know. I mean, there's still a lot of people that play WoW. There's a couple kind of friends I know that still play pretty actively, so I know there's definitely a player base. So I guess I'm not overly surprised, but at the same time, man, like the fact that WoW has sustained like what 7 million at this rate. I mean, it's dipped obviously down probably to like 3 or 4 and stuff like that, but the fact that it's been relatively steady is hats off to Blizzard and everybody for, you know, maintaining WoW for so long and having such sustained success. Because, I mean, dude, that's a decent amount coming in each month for each player, you know, times that by 7 million. That's a lot of a nice little money for Blizzard there.
Yeah, it's a very interesting article just in general from GameSpot, because I've only heard of so many people just being upset with the game in recent time. I know there's an element of nostalgia. I'm from the Halo community, so everybody's nostalgic over Halo 2 and 3, and they can't really get over the past is the past. So I think maybe some World of Warcraft fans might be a little bit negative on like the new stuff that's come out. But if these numbers are accurate, that's honestly incredible. Yeah. 7.5 million right now.
Yeah.
Like some people that like I watch Asmund Gold stuff, and he was always saying that like the game's falling apart, nobody's there. But at the same time, everybody you know of has heard of World of Warcraft. They had a freaking movie come out not too long ago.
Yeah, it's true. I'm curious. It's definitely impressive that they went from kind of a dip of 3 to 4. They were able to ride it back up to kind of what they had in terms of player base. So that's certainly impressive. Yeah. Getting that many people to like sign back up. Like, obviously, you're doing something right. So, again, hats off.
Absolutely incredible. So, pretty crazy for a game that's 20 years old to be this popular.
Yeah, no kidding. It was definitely a little bit of surprise. Like I said, I think the numbers overall were still like surprising to me. So, I thought it was worth covering just to be like, hey, yo. WoW's still out here.
I mean, it's probably the most popular MMORPG ever. Yeah. And you know what's kind of sad is I don't think there's a lot of good MMOs out there. I don't think they're as dead as like RTS games. But I don't think. Yeah, I don't know.
There's still like there's still like I think the MMO that comes to mind for me. It's probably like the most recent one for me was like New World. It was like probably the most recent one I played. That was, a few years ago. I don't know.
Diablo count as a MMO?
It might. I mean, I would think so. I mean, but, I don't know. Is it like a, I've never played Diablo. Is it like an overall like open world or?
Kind of.
Like, can other people connect to your game kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah, they can.
Okay.
Like you run as groups and you go raid like caves and stuff or whatever.
Can you run over into here. People outside of your party, quote unquote?
I haven't gotten that far. If you can, okay. I know I've seen people on the map that are like doing their own thing, but it's not like a PvP environment.
I got
so I guess it could classify as an MMO.
Yeah, I think it probably would.
Yeah, it actually does possibly.
Yeah.
Oh, these numbers are not accurate.
I never played Diablo myself. Big player base. Never played myself.
It's fun. Yeah, it is actually really fun.
I heard some of the boss battles are nuts.
Yeah, they are. They're infuriating sometimes. Oh yeah, there's Lost Ark. There's Rust. In terms of anything similar to World of Warcraft is, I don't think there's really anything comparable.
Wait. Rust? Maybe I'm not thinking of the right Rust. Maybe I'm thinking of a different Rust.
The survival game, Rust.
Yeah, but like...
apparently that's an MMO.
That's an MMO? What?
It's in, I just looked up Steam charts, man. I googled MMO.
Hey, listen. I wouldn't classify it as that, but that's just me. Maybe I'm wrong. But that's funny. It's the Rust I'm thinking of. Just like building stuff and you wipe in 5 days.
That's true.
Oh man.
Oh buddy.
You lose progression within a week. I'm just saying. Build it all up.
Yeah,
but the idea is like the storylines and like PvP is huge in that game. So
okay, yeah. You know, all right.
It's like that.
I don't know. Maybe it's a different type of MMO. There's probably a subcategory. But
yeah.
Cool.
This is the thing though, Mike. Xbox out here chirping.
They're always chirping. Phil Spencer's chirping, all bro. About that life.
They always be chirping up.
So what Kyle Heath over here is talking about is an article that came from Video Game Chronicle, and it was written by Tom Ivan, who we've covered countless times, I feel
My
like.
My boy, Tom. Let's go.
Oh, buddy. So the title of the article is Xbox claims mass layoffs were the outcome of a concerning lack of industry growth. Microsoft recently announced plans to cut 8% of employees at its gaming division. Dude, they're
Which we
always
reported
cutting
on earlier
jobs. Oh man. All right. So Microsoft's head of gaming has said the company's decision to cut 1,900 jobs was ultimately the result of a lack of growth in the industry. So in January, Microsoft announced plans to lay off about 8% of the 22,000 people employed by Xbox, Bethesda, and Activision Blizzard. The company completed its acquisition of Activision Blizzard in October 2023, and the process of taking ownership of franchises like Call of Duty, World of Warcraft, Diablo, and Overwatch. So in a message sent to staff when the job cuts were announced, Spencer said the decision was taken after Microsoft and Activision's leadership team set priorities, identified areas of overlap, and ensured that we are all aligned on the best opportunities for growth. I remember reading that and thinking initially, it's like, that is the most acquisition level email or memo I've ever seen. It's like so on board. So, all right. So reflecting on the layoffs in a new interview with Polygon, Spencer said a lack of industry growth was forcing publicly traded companies across the industry to cut loss. Of course it was. Cut costs. Sorry, not loss. So game developer Farhan Noor, who has been tracking job cuts dating back to the start of 2022 of videogamelayoffs.com, estimates that around 10,500 game industry employees were laid off last year. And less than 4 months into 2024, some 8,000 planned job cuts are already thought to be confirmed. Bro, that's a lot of job cuts.
That's it, dude. From 2022, I mean, well, it's 2023, I guess. And then, dude, we're about to hit that number 4 months into this year. Dude, what is happening? We've already discussed what could be happening. I don't need to discuss it here again, but yeah.
Yeah, a long time viewers now will definitely know. So let's go into this. So this is what Phil Spencer said in a quote. I'll say the thing that has me most concerned for the industry is the lack of growth. And when you have an industry that is projected to be smaller next year in terms of players and dollars, you get a lot of publicly traded companies that are in the industry that have to show their investors growth. Because why else does somebody own a share of someone's stock if it's not going to grow? That's a good point. The side of the business that has that then gets scrutinized is the cost side. Because if you're not going to grow the revenue side, then the cost side becomes challenged. AKA people. People get fired.
Bam. Severance. Bam.
Yeah. See ya. All right. Let's go. So we're a business, he said. I've said over and over, I don't get any luxury of not having to run a profitable growing business inside of Microsoft. And we're that today. But just across the industry, you mentioned it, and in sitting here at GDC, I reflect on friends of mine in the industry that have been displaced and lost their jobs, and how just, I don't want this industry to be a place where people can't, with confidence, build a career. He continues on saying that, so that's why I keep pivoting back to, how does this industry get back to growth? But to your question, for us at Xbox or any other teams that are out there, it is really an outcome of an industry that's not growing. It can grow and it will grow again, but you see this time right now and the implications have human impact. Jeez. And we should all reflect on that and think about it. That's sad. Okay. But let's wrap this up and then I want to get your takes, okay? So... there's only like two small paragraphs here. Let's get into it. According to research firm Newzoo via gameindustry.biz, the global games market generated an estimated $184 billion in 2023, representing a 0.6% increase over 2022, which itself was down 5% year over year. It expects the games market to generate revenues of $189.3 billion in 2024, and for that figure to grow to $205.7 billion in 2026. Elsewhere in the Polygon interview, Spencer said ballooning game budgets and Gen Z consumer behavior were driving factors in the company's decision to bring more Xbox games to PlayStation and Nintendo consoles. Dang, so they must be concerned they're not going to get more subscribers. They probably think they're exhausting their Xbox fan base, and they're trying to go hijack some of the people on PlayStation and Nintendo. Right?
It's going for the TikTok users, Mike. That's what we're going for.
The Gen Zers, they got more time than anybody.
Yeah, seemingly.
At least right now, they should.
Seemingly. Yeah, dude, I don't know, like, he's out here, like, spitting the uncomfortable truth, I think, right now, about kind of, you know,
yeah,
what's going on with the industry. And yeah, I mean, as a business, you know, if you don't grow, it looks terrible, right? And it's, you know, not what anyone wants. But I mean, you know, it seems, I mean, towards the end of the article, you know, we're talking about, you know, expecting the games market to generate, you know, more revenue over the next couple of years. I mean, granted, it's not, I guess, the grand scheme of things, it's not insane, but it's also like a decent amount of money. So, there's still going to be growth, but yeah, it's at a weird period right now. And, you know, we've discussed it in the past, kind of, you know, what all the contributing factors that could be colliding together to actually make these, you know, layoffs and everything and the industry as a whole what it is right now. So I think it's one of those things, you know, we're probably at a low point, and hopefully the next couple of years we start kind of swinging back in the other direction, and maybe not over hire this time. That'd probably be nice. But yeah, I think I think to a certain extent though, he's, you know, he's totally right. I mean, it's a weird spot right now, and it's gonna be interesting to see how kind of the next few years play out, because it seems like revenue will probably go back up, but yeah, it's hard for, you know, businesses and companies to justify no growth. So it just is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I'm scrolling through some of these articles, and every now and then I click on the comments and just kind of read what the comments say. And there are three comments in the comment section that I want to read for you. So this guy, Locke Cole, makes an excellent point. And he takes a quote essentially from like the idea of the businessman, right? So he goes, in quotes, number go up astronomically during lockdown because of the panty over here. And he goes, why numbers not still go up? And he goes, I hate business minds. And that's like, that's a very good point, because the problem is with investors, all they care about is percentage marks and how much the expectations are met or not met. And that's how they deal with how they handle like selling the stock or the shares or whatever. So I could definitely see that being an issue. The other comment is, video games are a luxury, especially when a whole generation of young people can't afford rent, a mortgage, or food. It's like, yeah, that's a good point too. And then tying off to that is another comment that says, drop the starting price of games back to $60. Make an effort to convince your partners to do the same. Things will start to correct themselves again. I think that's a little bit archaic though, because we're getting into the subscription model of everything. So
true.
Does the $60 really matter anymore?
I personally don't think so. But
I don't think so either.
That's just me. I mean, my point with these subscriptions, like, it's a subscription cloud ecosystem now, Mike. You know what I'm saying? You get these kind of subscription models going, you can kind of distribute money accordingly. I mean, I don't know. It is a weird time. Like, I mean, economically right now, it's getting bad. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're just, everyone's out here, and some people just, you know, can't afford to make ends meet. So
that's a fact.
It's unfortunate, man. And yeah, I mean, it's certainly, I think, a contributing factor to all this. It's just the economy as a whole. So, you know, I can hope. I mean, I hope that at some point we kind of swing back, but I don't know, dude, it's just a lot right now, man, across like a lot of industries, especially tech and gaming. So,
yeah, it's really hard to predict what the future is going to hold. The interest rates seem to be consistent until like September, which means that the Fed, like in the US, which, I mean, it has ripples to every single government body in the world. The United States is basically saying that they're not going to lower the interest rates for a while because they need to see an economic slowdown. And with economic slowdown comes people losing their jobs. And I want to believe it's for the greater good, you know, because you don't want inflation to get absolutely insane, even though it is like already outrageous.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell what's going to happen. And it's honestly, if you pay too much attention to all this, you get really bummed out and get kind of depressed. I don't know if I've talked to you about it, but it's like, when we keep covering all these articles about how everybody's getting laid off, it's tough, man.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's just a number, right? 22,000 people. Like, can you imagine that?
Right. Like, yeah.
That's a whole public university losing their jobs.
Yeah, I mean, not wrong.
If you put it in terms like that, like, that's getting kind of nuts.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's, yeah, I mean, yeah. Like, especially news like this and tech and stuff like that. Like, it's, you know, like, at first I was like thinking like it probably, like, you know, like it did suck, but like as the number gets higher and higher, it makes me like, it makes me think about it more. And like, you know, and especially in the tech industry of like, yeah, it's like, dude, like I need to make sure like I perform at work the best I can and try and do what I can. Cause it's like, if I don't, I feel like it's just like I'm next out the door. So And I feel like most people, especially in tech and in gaming now, it's like you just don't know, man. There's a looming kind of cloud, I feel like at any moment it could start raining. And it's
100%.
Yeah. It's, you know, even though I feel like relatively secure in my job, I mean, I feel like, especially after reading all these articles and hearing all these stories, it's hard for me to feel secure. It's like, you just don't know, yeah. I feel like, so it's rough times, man. And like, it affects me every now and again. I'm just thinking about that. I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of people out here struggling, dude, especially in these industries.
I really do think the vast majority of people are struggling, and it's really, really tough out there. And I don't think the people that are necessarily like writing these, well, I can't say for Tom Ivan, but the people that own these businesses, and I don't think they realize like their employees, even though they think they're paying them a livable wage, it's like, dude, there are things that are like really bad right now just for them. And like, things are getting out of control. You just got to hope that things, like, if you keep working and pick yourself up by your bootstraps kind of nonsense, kind of serious, but kind of joking. Like, you got to do what you can to benefit like yourself, like to take care of you and your family or whoever you got. So you need to support.
Yeah. It's about keeping a sane level of hope, I think, at the end of the day.
Yes. I think that's the best way to say hope.
I mean, because you know what they say, the opposite of happiness isn't sadness, it's hopelessness, right? So it's about just trying to keep a level of hope. And yeah, it can be hard to do, especially, you know, this year and kind of late last year. It's like, it's been just been pretty tough. So yeah, I don't know. Something I try to do every day is just kind of keep that level of hope just there, because at the end of the day, it's all you got for certain stuff. So
yeah, well, I think this actually ties into the next little article that we have. It's kind of a short one.
Yeah, it is. It's a little humorous. That's kind of why I chose it.
When you sent it to me, I was like, that is a... You like sent it to me and I was in the office and I'm walking. I'm like, what did Kyle say? I'm like, oh, that is hilarious.
Dude, it's a take, dude. It is a take.
That is a heck of a take.
So this is coming from GamesRadar. Catherine Lewis reports this. The Dragon Age creator, listen, everyone, the Dragon Age creator says that if crunch is, quote, the only way to make massive games, then he said, quote, maybe the industry deserves to die. So let him cook. All right. We're going to get into the article a little bit. Like, it sounds doomsday. All right. But like, just kind of hear where he's coming from. Right. So, David Guider, Guider is like Russian or something. When I looked it up, but I'm just gonna say Guider. David Guider, the creator of Dragon Age's setting, has spoken out against the current state of games industry and the fear developers have of needing to crunch to make enormous games as if it's the only way forward. He believes that, quote, it doesn't have to be that way, but if it did, maybe the industry deserves to die. This comes in a recent interview with PC Gamer, in which Guider, who's also the co-founder of Stray Gods developer Summerfall Studios, explains that those at his current studio... So get this. This is actually pretty sick. So he said, those at his current studio work 4-day weeks with a realistic schedule, in quotes, by working with the time they have rather than crunching to fit in more. Employees, quote, love what they do rather than feeling like, quote, they're just a resource to be tapped and scringed and squeezed and ringed. There isn't fear that exists if we don't have everybody working overtime and we don't make AAA games that have $200 million budgets and the focus is on photorealistic graphics and 1,000-hour playtimes. We need to pack all that in and work everyone to death making it, and that's the only way to make games, Guider explains, speaking about the industry as a whole. If that's true, then maybe the industry deserves to die. If that's true, the thing is that I just don't think it's true. So see, you gotta let him cook a little bit, right? Like, he's not saying the industry should die. He's just saying that, you know, if that was the truth about what it takes to make these games, it's not sustainable. That's essentially what he's saying. It's like, so.
Yeah, you're gonna burn out your workforce and they're not gonna come wanna work for you.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a good business model.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of like, when you hear the initial title, it's like, whoa, what is he talking about? When you actually hear how he explains it, it's like, okay, that, like, yeah, like, when he puts it that way, it's cooking. So, finishing out the article, it says the games industry has been in a very turbulent place lately, as reflected by the huge layoffs in studios worldwide, which have been particularly prevalent over the last year or so. Speaking last month following the news of EA's plans to cut around 670 jobs. Id Software co-founder John Romero said, "I've been in the games industry since I was a kid, and I've never seen anything like we're seeing now. For many of us, being a game dev is not just a job, but an identity, community, and culture. I am so sorry to everyone who's lost their jobs." That's, I mean, that's the thing too. It's like, and that's why it sucks. And that's why, you know, we report on this stuff all the time. And it's just like, it's kind of like every now and again, I just think about it, it's like, dude, there's a lot of people out here, man. They're just kind of having to,
their lives at stake.
I mean, yeah, their lives at stake. And it's like, and then for these people, like, you know, in game dev, it's obviously a passion, right? And so it's like, you lose that. It's kind of like, I feel like these people are probably like having these sort of identity crisis, or they're trying their hardest to try and find something else. So, you know, much love out there to everyone, especially in game devs, trying to find their way again. Because yeah, it's a lot of layoffs, dude. And I feel like with all these layoffs, it makes you wonder how many open opportunities there are across other you know, companies. So
yeah, it's really tough and really not fair, yeah, to say the least. But I really do like how, like, David over here being a creator of a big game, saying like, you guys don't need to do this. And you know, this actually reminds me of Gary Vaynerchuk.
I think it's Vaynerchuk.
Vaynerchuk. Okay, Gary V. Yeah, Gary V. Yeah, he had the whole thing when I like first got into him, like four or five years ago, maybe. It was like a while when I first heard about him. But the reason why I remembered him and I always thought like positively of him is he was talking about how the tech industry, and everybody thinks they need to be Steve Jobs, yep, and just be like a total jerk and treat his employees like crap and work them to death and pay them not well enough, right? He's like, that's how you make it. He's like, no, how about you kill people with kindness? Like, it's that simple. Yeah. Provide value, provide them with kindness, and don't allow anybody to work harder than you'll work, because it's like, that's your business. You can't force somebody else to work more than you.
Yeah.
I mean, true. You can, but I mean, that person's gonna hate you.
Yeah, that resentment or not respect you.
Oh, it's gonna show up. It'll show up, and that's when you start losing everybody. Yeah, so, mass exodus is a thing, or worse for some, like corporations or like stock traded, publicly traded companies. It's like unionization coming into play. Yep. Amazon will literally do anything to get rid of unionization, but then you got Jeff Bezos treating all of his employees like trash. It's like, what's going on, dude?
And he's out on Amazon, and now he's on a doing yacht orbit or
in the middle of nowhere.
He's
like,
working in orbit, trying to go to Mars because he wants to leave the planet. You know what I'm saying? Like, just yeah, it's wild. Yeah, dude.
He sends himself up to space. It's like, and then he had the audacity to go thank all his like Amazon employees, like have them watch in the warehouse. Bro, shut your mouth. They're making like $13, $14 an hour, living paycheck to paycheck, and that is their first job. They have two other ones that they're working part-time because they got to have like two kids in daycare because the daycare is raising their damn kids. And you're going to have the balls to be like, I'm in space. Thanks, guys. Like,
You made this possible.
Dude, this is like, that's a villain arc, man. That's how the Joker origin story starts. Good gracious.
Gosh, man. Listen,
he's Lex Luthor, bro.
It's funny you mentioned Gary V too, because like I this random video came up my recommended this week on YouTube, and it was about this like relatively smaller creator talking about like the importance of like, you know, pursuing something creative and like, you know, really like going for that, but also like something I didn't think about. He mentioned that God, I wish I knew this guy's. I wish I remember this guy's channel, but it was so cool because it was literally a 30 minute like talking piece while he was playing Sonic, and it was like he just literally like that was it, like he just had Sonic up and he was playing that and he just wanted to make a video, but he was talking about how like maybe to a certain extent like the Gary V's and stuff like that of like, you know, work to the bone and like really grind kind of stuff, and it's like,
oh, yeah,
really, it like it's very easy to kind of like burn out and lose that like, you know, flame for creating and stuff like that. And like, there's probably a certain extent of people that like did all that grinding, and now it's like 3-4 years after that kind of like, you know, movement of content kind of blew up. And so now it's like, I think it's probably burnout, maybe a little more prevalent among creators. And that's why we're seeing probably YouTubers and stuff like that, like to a certain extent.
Just walking away.
Yeah. And But yeah. And that actually, and that made me remind me, I think the title of the video is something like, there's no better time to be a YouTuber than now. And he was kind of explaining, like, you know, just like pursue something creative, but also like there's people exiting, but you know, there's always opportunity to kind of pursue something, especially if you're trying to create content on YouTube. It's kind of like, might as well just go for it kind of thing.
Oh, I don't know. Just gotta very, be passionate about whatever you're doing.
Yeah, very interesting mindset though. It's kind of just like, yeah, that kind of, you know, grind set is kind of like, you know, I think just probably doing more harm than good to a certain extent.
Oh, yeah.
Like creatives now. So, I don't know. Interesting stuff. Listen, Michael, I'm saying is maybe the industry deserves to die if we're burning people out and working them to the bone and sitting here grinding out overtime that we don't get paid for and we're just crunching everything.
Dude, I used to do that. It's brutal when that happens. It's not fun. It eventually wears you out and then you're done for.
Because you don't get sleep. And you know what happens when you don't get sleep? You die earlier, Mike. That's what happens. You know, it's
that's a fact. That is definitely a fact. You got to grind within reason. That's what I was talking about at the beginning of the episode. Just like having this idea of let's do our best to be as disciplined as possible. That way, when we do have to do the things we're supposed to do, we get it done efficiently and effectively.
Yeah.
Or like if you see problems right away, take care of it right away.
Yeah.
It's like, don't let it sit. That's the idea.
Yeah, very true. I think it's important to always keep that in mind, Mike. But with that being said, I don't have any more articles. I ran out. Sorry.
Yeah. I think I'm going to try to do our best to not ramble on at the end. I think we're just going to finish because I'm looking at the clock and this might be the shortest episode we've had in a while. And we crushed 5 episodes. And my dog, he chilling. If you got the video up, he vibing. How's it going?
He showed the toes earlier, but I didn't mention it at the time because he was stretching.
I saw you grinning. So he's absolutely sacked. So let's go ahead. Let's wrap this up. Do you have anything to add? I don't think so, right?
No, I don't think so, dude. Keep an eye out for the content. Maybe we're rolling out this month. Maybe we rolling it out.
Yeah, you're absolutely crushing it, dude. I'm really proud of you. Thank you.
I'm liking the growth, dude. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. I like people getting raged. When it's just dude, like, hey, we're just
reporting.
Yeah, it's like so the funny, video dude. You're watching is the initial reaction video. Just because information came out later doesn't mean we're spreading misinformation. It is what it is, dude.
Name of the game, it's baby. Not that big of a deal. Name of the game, you know.
Yeah. Rage bait. We're grifters now. Subscribe to grifters, m2podcast.com.
grifters.m2podcast.com.
Heck yeah, dude. All right, enough rambling. Usual deal, and if this is your first time listening, this is the deal. At the bottom in this description of pretty much every single place where you're listening or watching, we have socials. You can check us out there if you want to. We got Discord if you want to join. We most importantly have timestamps of each individual article that we've covered and the links to the article, so check it out. Give the original writers their due. And yeah, I think that's it, right?
I think that's it.
So this has been the latest episode, your week of review, M2 Podcast. I'm Michael Anty. This is Kyle Heath, and we're going to catch you guys later. Peace out.
Keep gaming, everyone. Bye.
Keep gaming.